Okay. This evening, as I like to do once in every cycle, pretty much, of our classes, I like to spend one evening going through a class with Nechama Leibowitz. Nechama Leibowitz, for those of you who know and for those of you who don't know, is one of the foremost female educators in our generation, in our collective generation. She passed away a number of years ago, just a few number of years ago. Her yartzei actually is in Nishan. I was thinking maybe her yartzei was this week and then I'll do it, but it's not. It's in Nishan. So, but anyway, I picked this week and the month because she does. It was Rachel Nami's yartzei last week. It's Shlomo Karloff's yartzei tomorrow.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, we're doing a Kumzitz in class.
It'll be fun.
Yeah, Rachel Imenu.
Oh,
but you know, this woman, Miss Abramovitz, I think she wrote a book about how Nechama Leibowitz teaches.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I heard of it.
Fishman bought the book for me for a present.
Oh, wonderful.
And, you know, she always tells what everybody else said, but she never tells what she said. So this book shows her lesson plans and how she did it, and it's such a wonderful book.
So I have some of those books also. She's a master educator. She was really the first one who brought to our classrooms the concept of asking what's Rashi's question and what's Rashi's answer. And this type of learning was something that she really initiated.
And she said never lecture. Like, talk after your students.
Right.
Never lecture.
Well, I never actually took one of her classes, but I know a lot of people who did, my husband being one of them, and her classes were all interactive, and she really taught the way she preached. You know, mm-hmm. like in graduate school, you have a lot, like I had many classes where the teachers will sit up there with yellowed notes and say, always, every year should be new, and you should be as excited about your material and keep up on the modern research and never lecture to your students, and you can't get a word in edgewise because teachers lecturing all the time mm-hmm. using old notes and whatever. But she wasn't like this. She really taught the way she felt you should teach. So, so we're going to do this evening during her class on the month. And I should have really put her title on there. Her title for this class is called Flesh Pots and the Trials of the Man. But you'll see as we get going a little
sure
further what it means.
That way.
That's how the translator wrote it.
And the
trial of the Man, I think it was, of the Mana. Our focus tonight is going to be Chapter 16, Perek Tzayin in the Book of Shemot. So if you'll take a moment and glance through it, please, with your partner next to you. I put a note on the top of the page to pay close attention to Pasuk Gimel. How would you explain it in light of what you know about the time the Jews spent in the Chayim? So just note that while you're looking through it. Okay, what do you think? Pasuk Gimel. The Jewish people say, "Mi yitain lukeinu b'yad Hashem b'eretz Mitzrayim." We wish that we would have died by the hand of God in the land of Egypt. B'shivteinu al sir habasar, as we sat by the flesh pots. Be'achleinu lechem l'soba, when we ate bread to our satisfaction. Ki hotzeitam otanu el hamidbar hazeh. He brought us out to this terrible wilderness, l'hamit et kol ha'kal hazeh b'ra'av, to kill the entire congregation with famine.
Such a complaint.
Such a crutch.
Mm-hmm.
What do we know about how B'nai Israel, what their experience was like when they were in Mitzrayim? Does it go together with this comment of theirs? Here they're saying, we sat near pots of meat and ate bread to our satisfaction. Does that fit in with our image of slavery in Mitzrayim? Not particularly. Not really very much. Right. Very selective memory. They have no mention of the hardships, of the humiliation, of the persecution, of the whippings, of the hard work and the hard toil and the time away from their families. No mention of that. Their only mention is that, oh, we remember how much meat we had and how much bread we had at that time. So our question really is that we're going to start with, is this a true picture of their time in Mitzrayim? And there are three different opinions in three different midrashim that I brought you on the bottom of the page. Source number one is in the Mechilta, which is what we call a midrash halakha on Sefer Shemot. Rabbi Eliezer HaModa'i, Omer Rabbi Eliezer ben Moda'i says, Avadim hayu Yisrael lamalachim b'mitzrayim. The Jewish people were slaves to kings in Mitzrayim. Yatzu lasuk, they would go out to the marketplace, notulin pat. They took bread, basar v'dagim, meat and fish, v'chol davar, anything they wanted. V'ein kol beria moche b'yadam. No creature, no person would try to stop them. Yotzin lasadeh, they would go out to the field, notulin anavim u'teinim v'rimonim, they would take grapes and figs and pomegranates, v'ein beria moche b'yadam, and no one would try to stop them. So Rabbi Eliezer clearly thinks, as presented in this midrash, Rabbi Eliezer clearly thinks that they are remembering correctly. He accepts their statement at face value. But, we just said a minute ago, this doesn't really fit in with our image of Mitzrayim. So let's reread the midrash possibly another way. It could be that the reason that they were able to do all these things, to go to the shuk and take their food and stuff like that, was that that was the only way that they could eat, was by stealing. By taking the food without buying it. They didn't have any money to buy it. If they were slaves, they didn't get paid for their work. Nobody handed them food. They had to steal it. They'll go to the market and help themselves to bread, meat, and fish. Why would nobody stop them? Because nobody saw them. That's what stealing is all about. Nobody seeing you. Or it could be something that I think, as Nachama points out, which I think fits in very well with our image of Mitzrayim and what they were all about, it could be that the Jews were permitted to steal from those less fortunate than they. Because this is how the Mitzrayim worked. Make anyone who's less than me feel bad. But anything I can do to put myself higher. So the Jews learned from this culture that they would exploit and steal from anybody who was on a lower level than they are in terms of their level in life.
But also you have to remember, they keep saying that their mentality was so different. They were like a slave mentality. They didn't think like rational people. And this complaining to God is not really a rational thing that we would do if we were coming from a normal society.
So you're saying just that their memory is selective because they didn't have a choice otherwise.
They had such a warped sense of, I mean, it's like brainwashing, really.
But Rabbi Yasser really says that what they said truly happened, that they really had flesh pots, that they sat near pots of meat and had enough bread, possibly because they stole it, but that they had it. They had the plenty.
They helped themselves,
They helped themselves to it.
And
Eliezer takes it at face value. Now, there are two other opinions in the Midrash that disagree with this. The second opinion is the number two, Blood and Shemot Rabbah.
The thing I'm saying is their mentality was they steal. Or they take what they want. That's the way they came out of Mitzrayim. But what they need something, they take it.
Okay.
Whether they weren't thinking it's right, it's wrong. They were living a miserable life, and this is the way they helped themselves.
So the question is this statement a true statement, a true picture of what happened in Mitzrayim? So according to this midrash, and as you're suggesting also, that yes, it could be true that they did have enough meat and bread because they stole it.
That's right.
They took it.
They took what they needed.
Right.
But couldn't it have been also that the Mitzrayim fed them because they wanted them to be more productive, and if they were emaciated and not strong, then they wouldn't be
able to work. Right. So that's going to be, we're going to get one minute. Let's do the second interpretation, the second meaning first. Okay. The Mitzrayim hayu meshubadim Yisrael 80 shana. In Mitzrayim, the Jews were subservient, were slaves there for 80 years. That the Mitzri would go to the midbar and he would grab a ram or a deer, and he would slaughter it, and he would make a pot roast out of it, and he would cook it, and he would eat it. The Jewish people would see it, but they wouldn't taste it. As it says, this is very interesting. He bases it on the pasuk. We sat near the patch of meat, but what did we eat to get full? The bread. It doesn't say when we ate from the pot of bread.
Right.
A very nice diyuk on the pasuk itself. That they actually ate the bread. They saw, they smelled the basar. But this midrash is pointing out to us is that the Jewish people remembered what they were remembering back to Mitzrayim, that even though they never tasted the meat, actually, they're saying here that it was better to be in a society, even if I can't taste the meat, to be in a civilized society than in this wilderness and this Midbar that you're bringing us out to now.
Because that was their mentality.
That was what they were used to. They're saying it was better then than now, no matter what, even though we couldn't eat from the bread, from the meat, even though we couldn't taste it. Because it wasn't. Now, there's a third opinion in the Midrash. So the first opinion is that what they said happened.
Literally.
The second opinion breaks up the psukim very carefully, that we sat near the pots of flesh, but we didn't eat from them.
We actually ate the bread.
Now, the third interpretation says as follows. V'lama shikru. Why did they lie? So does this accept the statement at face value? Absolutely not. He looks at it and says, the Jewish people lied. They never sat there with pots of meat and with enough bread to make themselves satisfied. But why did they lie? To say, b'shavteinu asir basar. Malo tzudim hayu b'levenim. Weren't they working hard with the bricks? El ha-shakachta ha-ani lomai. This is the way that a poor man says, achati b'shatiti yayin etoponi. Harbe, I ate and wined and dined, as he says in English, I wined and dined handsomely with so-and-so when he didn't even exchange a word with him. Just in order to prompt others to give him. This is what we call name dropping. How often do we have, you know, sometimes a mishal will come to the door and, oh, well, your neighbor gave me blah, 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 you know, and never gave anything, but why is he doing it? To get you to give.
Mm-hmm.
So why were they lying and saying that they didn't get their meat? Saying that they got meat even though that they hadn't gotten meat? It could be because they had an exaggerated view, an exaggerated, idealized view. They imagined that that's how it happened, but they forgot.
Mm-hmm.
But what's the difference? What the Chama says here is very interesting. What she says, what are they being wistful about? What are they remembering back then? Back then, they didn't have to take care of their physical needs. Everything, she says, everything was taken care of. Like he said, we said that the taskmaster, even though he beat them and humiliated them and made them work very hard, he fed them so that they could work, to give them the energy and the strength to do the work and the task that was necessary. But now what happens? They're the masters of their own destiny.
That's right.
And this goes back to what you mentioned earlier with the slave mentality. What do you mean I have to take care of myself?
Mm-hmm.
I have to get my own food. I have to find, you know, and that was something that they couldn't handle. Yeah.
Now I remember that we learned, though, in the other psukim, it was a fear of we're not going to have, and they didn't trust that God was going to provide for them. So that doesn't quite jive with...
Hold that when we get to, okay. Until we get to the eggs, okay? Because I'm going to move
because
in that direction.
Because they didn't trust anybody except...
We're going to move into that direction in one moment,
so
okay?
Elizabeth,
so right now...
Why didn't she run away? They became the master.
I'm not very familiar with all the details of it.
No, that was basically the details they said. Why didn't
I
she
stay
run
away,
away
from these kinds
because
of stories.
They were she was brainwashed. Same thing with...
you know, I had this. I'm working on this with my students now. A lot of them are seniors and looking for schools next year in Israel. So the big question is, I don't want to go to Israel. I don't want to go to that school. I'm going to get brainwashed. So I tell them, if you walk in with the brain...
That's brainwashing they can do it.
No, I don't think so. I think that there is a lot of brainwashing that goes on in those schools, and it's not genuine learning. It's brainwashing in a lot of them. So I tell them always, I say, if you go in with your brain... you will leave with your brain. You go in knowing what you're getting into. You know, if you're going to that kind of a school, you go in knowing what you get into, and you will come out, you know. Okay, you'll come out on top.
But they're very young and impressionable.
Of course they are, which is why we try to send them to the best place. Okay, so now we have these three opinions. Why did they say this statement that seems to totally not have anything to do with what actually happened in Mitzrayim? Either it did in some way happen in Mitzrayim, that they did get food, get a lot of food, even if it was by stealing. Number two, we said that it was that specific thing with the pasuk that they smelled it, but they didn't taste it, they ate the bread. And the third interpretation was that they truly had everything that they needed in the time. They had the food that they needed to survive, to work, to move forward, and now that they had to take care of it themselves. And that's what was scary. So what was God's response to them? Pasuk Dalet Bayomer Hashem El Moshe, he says, okay, Hinini mamtir lachem, lachem min ha'ashamayim. I'm going to rain down for you lachem, bread from the sky. V'yatsa ha'am v'laktu d'var yom b'yomo. The nation will go out and collect every day So I can tell them if they're going to follow in my path, in my Torah, or if not. So he's giving them what they wanted, but there's a condition. They're on probation. They're fetching a lot already. This is already the second fetch. If you look a little bit earlier, you know, just one page before we see the end of Az Yashir. So they just crushed through the Amsuf. They just sang Az Yashir. You know, they dance, they sang. And what happens? Pasuk Chafet of the previous parash. Vayishan Moshe et Yisrael mi-Amsuf ve'etu amin bar shur. They leave the Amsuf. They're going towards the Midbar. Ve'elchu shloshi amin b'Midbar ve'lo matzumayim. 3 days, no water. Ve'evo marata, they came to Mara. Ve'lo yachlu lishtok mayim imara. They came in here. They couldn't drink the water because it was bitter. Al-Kain Karashimo Mara, that's why they called the place bitter. Right away, 3 days after they come out of the Amsuf, they're accepting already, they have no water. Now we're a little bit later. They're at a place with a lot of water. They say, okay, now we need food.
Food.
Right. We need our steaks. Remember the food that we had in Mitzrayim, now we need food. It's like, you know, it's like my kids don't go to my parents. It's like, I mean, is there anything to eat? Is there anything to drink? You know, the rules. Let's get on the highway first. this is what sounds like what's going on here. Okay. So our question now, but Hashem does give them what they asked for, but he says this is on probation. This is going to, see, the man is a test to see if they'll follow my Torah. Now, I don't know, but to me it seems like the man is a chesed, not a challenge, not a proof. So I throw the question out to you, as I am known to do, to give you a thinking question. What do you think was the challenge of the man?
We have it today. What will we have tomorrow?
Okay. The dependence on Hashem without knowing if it's going to continue.
Right. The faith. Yeah, right. They have to have the emunah that tomorrow they'll get it also.
Sure. What else? Other ideas? The challenge of the man.
Challenge of the man?
The manna from heaven, the food that came down from heaven. What was the challenge involved?
Will there be enough for everybody?
Okay.
So that, especially over Shabbat, they shouldn't take too much.
Isn't that interesting that here we have a remnant of the man every Shabbat on our own tables? The Lechem Nishna. Right. The reason we have two chalot is because on Friday afternoon, a double portion of man fell down. And indeed, the reason why we put the challah on the challah board and cover it with a covering is because the man also was covered with two coverings, one underneath, a layer of towel of dew, rain down from sky first to sort of make the ground clean, and then the man would fall down, and then another layer on top, so it wouldn't get all dusty, and we have this on our table as proof of this emunah.
When it was only a one-day supply.
Okay.
The fact that it was only a one-day supply, they weren't sure if they had to keep it always for tomorrow, did they have to hide it.
They were told not to.
Yeah, but they couldn't grasp the concept that tomorrow there's going to be another supply, and tomorrow and tomorrow. Well, they had
a one-day supply,
and they were told not to hoard it.
They didn't know.
And how would they know what it is?
Yeah.
Hashem told them that it's going
to
come down. And you're going
to
know. This
but
is,
they
you know,
didn't
it's
have any
down.
Faith that there would be another one tomorrow, and they didn't know.
Okay, so it seems to be in agreement that it's an issue of faith. I want to present to you two other... Yeah, shoot. Go ahead.
If you think of it, they just left Mitzrayim, and they also weren't in charge of their food. Like they also had, you know, they weren't taking care of it. So it's kind of the same thing.
How?
Because they, again, don't have to take care of their food.
So what's the challenge?
They have to trust Hashem, but still, it's like kind of the same thing. It's not such a far...
So it's a little easier for them, again.
I think
back to
that.
But so then what's the challenge?
Being able
what's
to...
What's the nisayon in it, then?
Well, following that line of thought, they have to work. They knew if they worked, they'd get food.
Okay.
Here, they didn't know what they had to do to get it.
Okay.
They just have to believe.
Okay.
That's a hard challenge to believe in a concept that was very
But if you go back to this concept of the slave mentality, that they're used to getting clockwork their food, it could be that they didn't make a connection necessarily between working and food. If I don't work, I get beaten. If I work, I get food. but here I'm not working and the food is still coming. What's the challenge in that?
It's pretty scary.
Okay. Okay.
What should I do? How do I behave to keep this happening?
And they like their provider in Egypt better than they like God as the provider because they didn't know what to expect.
And at least the one in Egypt was...
It was a sure thing.
...determined.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Good. So let's look at some other ideas before we get back to these ideas, because I want to end with this idea of the emunah. So Rashi looks at it and he says, what's the test? The test is, im yishmeru et ha-mitzvot ha-tluyot bo. There are a lot of mitzvot that were connected with the man. That you're not allowed to leave it over, that you have to take extra on Shabbos, that you can't go extra before Shabbos, so you can't go out on Shabbos to collect it. There are a lot of mitzvot connected to the man. So Rashi says, when we're testing to see, I'm going to bring them the man to see if they'll keep my Torah, my laws, what is he talking about? The law is connected to the man. Very nice. Problem with Rashi. Then why is that, are those words, I'm going to see if they go by my Torah, written here when the man is falling down instead of later when the halakot are given?
And they didn't have a Torah yet.
Well, Torah too means my halakot, let's say.
Yeah, but God was testing them before he gave him the Torah. The Torah was the full.
Right, so we're saying Torah T is my laws, let's say, okay? So here, you know, the whole concept of where is it, with The whole concept of gathering the stuff and everything isn't until the next page even. You know, a few psukim later, all these mitzvot aren't written until later, so why isn't that phrase written over there when those mitzvot are given?
How did they even know when it was Shabbat?
How do they know?
They knew because there's a double portion in
there. But how do they even know the days? I mean, how do they even track days of the week?
It's a good question.
The sun comes up, sun goes down.
Right. That was a new concept was Shabbos, which is one of the things that the Medrash goes through by saying that was one of the first things that Moshe requested from Paro was that the Jews not work on Shabbos, to give them this idea, this concept. Okay, so Rashi, actually, he says that the man itself wasn't the trial, wasn't the nisayon. He shifts it a little bit to saying that it was the halachot connected to the man. But Ramban brings it back to the man itself. And he says as follows, later on in Dvarim, you'll keep your hand here for a moment, and you'll flip to the end, to Dvarim Perek Chet. Sefer Dvarim, the book of Dvarim, is a repetition, largely, of things that were written earlier. And the Chumash, and if you look in Parakah Pasuk Bet, he talks about V'zacharta kol adach ha-shol ha-licha-cha Hashem lo-lakach ha-zer b'n-shana b'n-bar. Remember the way Hashem led you these last 40 years in the Midbar. L'man anotcha l'nashotcha, to afflict you, to test you, l'da'at et asher b'l'vavcha ha-tishmor b'sotav imlo, to know if you're going to keep the mitzvot or not. And then he continues and he talks about that this is connected to the lechem, to the food that came down from Shamayim that you didn't recognize, your parents didn't recognize. This was a strange food. It was unusual texture. It looked like nothing. It tasted like, we don't know. You know, that's why we have all these midrashim. It could taste like whatever you wanted. That's not what the psukim say. The psukim, according to the way the psukim painted for us, it seems pretty bland. It was sort of like matzaniel coming down from Shamayim. And you could fry it and you could bake it and you could cook it, but what can you do beyond that? You know, there isn't a whole lot you can do to dress up the man. So that's why the Midrash does all these fancy things to the man. So Ramban says that this was the trial. This is the difficulty. The man itself is something difficult. To eat the same thing day in, day out, that was something that wasn't easy to do and to be satisfied with that.
It's not mentioned about Karasi.
How come?
It's mentioned, Hashem says that they should watch, that they should be careful about watching his Torah.
So Torah means my teachings. It doesn't necessarily mean the Torah that we have in front of us. It could refer to just general teachings.
Yeah.
As we saw also 2 weeks ago when we spoke about the Avot keeping the Torah, Hashem said that Abraham had kept Torah Tai, Chukotai, Mishpotai. You know, so Torah Tai...
But he was a Navi, so he could have possibly known about it.
He could have, or it could be not, that he didn't know about it. But the word Torah means teaching. That's why we call this the Torah. It doesn't necessarily have to mean this particular Torah. Yeah. So, okay. So, fine. So, that's one way, is that the man itself, or the mitzvot connected to the man, that was the nisayon, that was the difficulty in the trial. Okay. That's one opinion that the mepharshim take. But some mepharshim take a totally different view. And they say, okay, The man signified a life of plenty. The man was easy. You didn't, like we said before, you didn't have to do anything, and it came down every day like clockwork. You didn't have to work for it. You didn't have to run in circles for it. The man came down every single day. So what was the trial in the man? What's the nishayon? It sounds like it's easier. It sounds like it's a chesed. What's the trial in the man?
Well, the test was...
So, says Sefarno, in source number 6, when he will be provided for without pain, when he gets everything he needs easily, is he going to recognize where it comes from? Is he going to acknowledge that it's coming from Hashem? Is he going to notice that Hashem requests other things about him? Or is he simply going to sit there and accept all this good? And the Or HaChaim puts a little different bent on him. He says, since bread from heaven required no preparation, they will have leisure time enough for everything, and I will then see if they use it to walk in my law and act. You know, this is the ultimate, what do you do on Sunday's question? You have all this free time now. You don't have to work for the month. How are you going to spend it? Mm-hmm. Are you going to watch Sunday afternoon football, or are you going to go to a Sunday afternoon cheer, or what are you going to do? Or some combination of the two? What are you going to do? That's what Or HaChaim says, and Sforno says that a little bit as well. You know, when things are good for you, do you acknowledge that it comes from Hashem? And the ease of getting the man in itself is a test to see how am I going to spend my time now.
It's not good.
Why? Why is it not good?
You have nothing to do.
You have nothing to do. Right, sometimes, you know, you don't appreciate things that you don't work for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I wanted to take my students on a trip to Chicago. We were supposed to go yesterday, actually, and today. We're supposed to be there right now. But I realized that if I just sort of put it out there for them, it wouldn't mean anything to them. So I told them that they had to raise money for it because I want to go with a driver in a van. Well, we're still sitting here in Oak Park. I have a feeling we're not going to Chicago this year. But if you put the effort into it, then it means something more to us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
right.
Mm-hmm. You know, then it means something much more to you. Okay, so what's the third opinion of the question? That the trial is independent, as you all mentioned earlier. That the difficulty in the Nishayon with it was the dependence on HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and is it going to be there tomorrow? And yet, I don't have to do anything for it, so how do I know if the man is going to come tomorrow? And I want to read you a paragraph from this book, which is written by Rabbi Haskell Lindenthal, who is a rabbi in Connecticut, in West Hartford, Connecticut, who came to the shul that we went to in Connecticut. Let's see if there's a picture of him in here. He was born in Poland in 1916, came to the United States via Palestine in 1940. He and his wife of 58 years, Naomi, live in West Hartford, Connecticut. He's a wonderful, wonderful man, very sweet. He gave us, when B'Tzalel was born, he wrote us a note that said that B'Tzalel should always live the kill in the shadow of God. And it was like, he's a very special man. He keeps a list, an ongoing list of Hebrew words that the Hebrew and the English have the same root. Like a goren is a granary. The same sound. So he has like a list of 100 words or something of words like that, you know. Interesting. So I want to read a paragraph to you about this book, which is absolutely fascinating, about his life. It is hard to describe the poverty that existed in our house. I remember when I was 3 or 3.5 years old, right after World War I, we received a package of food from my Tante Adel and her daughter Polly in America.
Mm-hmm.
It contained a bag of flour, a bag of sugar, a can of olive oil, and a big salami marked kosher. The first 3 items my father said were okay. However, he was in doubt about the salami. After all, it had come from Trafe America. While we prayed to the Lord, my father ran to the Rav, the salami in hand. The Rav inspected it and pronounced it kosher. What a simcha! Every night at supper time, my mother cut a piece of bread and a thin slice of salami, about 1/4 inch for each of us. This package of food lasted for a long time, especially the salami. How fortunate we considered ourselves. May the souls of Tante Adel and Cousin Polly rest among the holy and pure.
Mm.
You know, how many of us think, you know, look in our pantries. If we would lose electricity again, now, God forbid it shouldn't happen. But if we would lose electricity.
We could eat for a couple of weeks.
How many weeks could we eat?
A long time.
Right. But would we be eating a piece of bread and 1/4-inch slice of salami for dinner? No, we'd be eating a lot more for them each time.
Anything.
We wouldn't be rationing, certainly not like that. If we ration, I mean, you're going to have a sandwich. You're not going to have just a piece of bread and a quarter piece of salami, a quarter inch of salami. It's like nothing. I'm sorry, is this bothering you, Tucker?
No.
You know, that we, Baruch Hashem, I think about in my house, I have a pantry and a Costco pantry and a refrigerator freezer in my kitchen and an extra freezer in the basement. It's an unbelievable amount of food if it's all full.
Yes. Mine is
unbelievable. What's
that? I think I probably could live for 6 months.
6 months. Now imagine in front of you. Okay. That's what my Costco cabinet is for. So imagine if you know, you could live for 6 months. Imagine if in front of you you have enough food that you know you have can only last you one day. You have this amount of food, but you don't know if it's going to come back tomorrow.
But as I...
It's a fear.
I remember hearing that my parents, all I am a shalom, were hungry. Because when we first came from Melville to Winnipeg, my father's a friend of Bahavos HaShochet, and he had to wait for people to bring chickens, 2 for $15 for shtita. So they would buy a bread, and the adults would eat onions. I was told, but I was just kid, so I got
sure.
the best bread.
I didn't eat for a whole year. I mean,
right? You know, but we the view we take it for granted. You know, we have all this food and we have a lot of stuff. We don't understand really. Thank God, most of us don't understand what it means.
It's hard to
not know if you're going to have food tomorrow, right? Which is why I brought this. Top a little bit, but really it's very strong. And Rashbam picks up on this and he said, what's the test? He says, he says that I may prove him since every day they would depend for their sustenance on me. Because every day they're going to trust in Hashem. The Amunah, that's what the man was all about.
And it says here that the sages state that the Torah could be given only to people who were eating the man. Because a nation that has been so taught to trust and rely upon the kindness and constancy of God could accept his Torah as well.
Okay.
That's the whole lesson here.
Right. Where so the Midrash here, she's reading from the bottom. She's cheating.
Oh.
She's cheating.
Oh,
we don't do that in this class, Mrs. Torgow.
We don't? No. We should be using a Chumash with no English, like Susan Levitin does.
Okay.
When I took classes with her, nothing in English.
Okay, the Midrash and the Mechelter says on the bottom of the page, I brought you a day's portion every day. He who created day created his sustenance. From here, Rabbi Eliezer the Mosai is going to say, whoever has the wherewithal for today and says, what shall I eat on the morrow, shows a lack of faith, as it is stated that I may prove him whether he will walk in my law. But if we are wondering what we're going to eat tomorrow, that's a lack of emunah in the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Of course, the Kadosh Baruch Hu will take care of me. You know, there's that joke of the girl who was going to get married, and her chashan comes in finally to meet her father, and they go into a closed room, and they're in there for like 20 minutes, and they come out, and she says, Tati, what did he, you know, what do you think? And my father says, it's going through, it's a wonderful match, he thinks I'm God. She said, what do you mean he thinks I'm God? I said to him, well, how are you going to support my daughter? He says, the Abister Ben Health, and God will help.
Yes.
How are you going to feed my daughter? God will help. He thinks I'm God. But if you have, you know, and that's an unbelievable sense of emuna, to believe in his father, so strongly like that. You know, but if you have that idea in your mind, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will take care of me no matter what. There's an unbelievable amount of dependence on Hashem, and it's a very difficult thing to have. You know, we had this car accident in January, coming back to my brother-in-law's wedding. So, Baruch Hashem, we have another Simcha coming up, also at the end of December, another brother-in-law getting married, and my nephew's bar mitzvah. And I'm unbelievably petrified to go. So my aunt is a psychologist. I'm scared of the accident before. No, a driving accident. And car accident. So I'm nervous. It's the same situation again, whatever. So I call my aunt, and my aunt is a psychotherapist, and she's also a very spiritual person. So she said to me, and before we went to Israel, I was also very nervous, and she gave me an exercise to do to close my eyes and say Shema and bring Hashem into me and realize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is taking care of me and, you know, it's in his best interest to keep me going. And then at that point, I have a tefillah to say to him, special thing, whatever. So I called her and I said, so what do I do for this trip? I said, you know, so she said, well, the exercise I gave you to do before you went to Israel works very well also. So I said, okay, you know, I've used it several times since then. Baruch Hashem has helped me through some difficult times. I said, you know, and I said to her, I guess I know that really what I have to realize is just, it's not in my control, because I'm a total control freak. I said, I just have to realize it's not in my control, and the one whose control it's in, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, will take care of everything, and he'll do what needs to be done so that everything comes out okay. And she said to me, but that's a very hard way to think. It's very hard to think that way. You know, with you.
Thank you.
You know, it's so true. This is my grandma's everything.
What did she give you?
So she gave me a meditation exercise to do. But the point is, like, when she said that, it made me feel so much better. Because here I am. I consider myself a spiritual person. She's a spiritual person. She's had a lot of difficulties in her life. And for her to say it's very hard for a person to come to the actual realization that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is taking care of us and he's in control and everything is okay because he's in control. You know, this blind faith that we have in our parents. You know, and this is what struck me after the accident, that the first thing I did was turn around to look at the kids and make sure they're okay. And they cried for a minute and I looked and I said, everything's okay. And they stopped. And they were fine. And Simcha's chatting it up with the EMT people and everything's, you know, great with him. Because I said it was fine, it's fine. And for us to have that kind of emuna in Hashem, for my aunt to tell me it's hard, like, that makes it so much easier, you know, to tell me that it's hard, something like that. And here's what it was, that they had to have this emuna in Hashem.
It has to happen. It will happen, you know. You can't.
Yes, that's correct also, but you have to hope that it doesn't happen. So I want to look for 1 minute in Bamidbar Perakut Aleph. Now, I'm not paying attention. Bamidbar Perakut Aleph. Because in Bamidbar Perakut Aleph,
is the
meat that you were talking about earlier. I'm on page 788.
Wait, let me take one from you. 780.
Where are you, Diane? Perakut Aleph, Pasuk Vav. If you look a little earlier, Pasuk K, we can read it in English. Who will feed us meat? We remember the fish we ate in Egypt. Now, this is after 2 years of eating the man. We remember the fish we ate in Egypt free of charge. And the cucumber, and free of charge. It's interesting. What does Ramban say on this? You should just know. He says that
we stole it.
Right. And the cucumbers, melons, leeks, onions, and garlic. Why did the man not taste like those things that they're remembering it that the man doesn't taste like? Says Rashi. Because those are things that are harmful for a pregnant woman to digest and harmful for the child that she's nursing to have. These are things, if you look at them, some of them are things that pregnant women, that nursing women don't eat, because if it goes to the child, it will make the child very gassy and colicky. So the man didn't taste like those things. But now our life is parched. There's nothing. We have nothing to anticipate but the man. Ratai says, Nafshenu Yivesha, Ein Kol Biltiel HaMan Inenu. All we have in front of us is the man. And Rabban tells us this is exactly what they were rebelling against, was this continuous state of dependence. All we have is the man. We can't depend on you anymore. We need something in our freezer. Hashem said to him, you want slab? You want meat? You want a lot of meat? I'll give you so much it's coming out of your noses. Literally. And that's what happens later on in the story here. But Ramban explains to us that this is what they were rebelling against, was this very dependence on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So let's go back to the beginning of our discussion with the meat, the pot roast. My grandmother calls it the Gedempte Fleisch. So, is that correct? Is that
what
a correct?
Yes, Gedempte. Were they nostalgic about the fish? I mean, the fish came, there was tons of fish. It was all coming out of the sea.
Not in the Midbar. There's no sea in the Midbar.
Where'd they get the fish from?
When they were in Egypt, they got the fish.
I'm talking about in Egypt.
So now they're not in Egypt anymore. They're in the Midbar. And they missed the fish because all they've been having for 2 years is man.
Yeah.
So going back to the beginning, the Chama says that whether or not they actually had the meat, whether they lied or they said the truth, it really doesn't matter. The point is moot. Because that concept of the meat belongs to a time of persecution, of humiliation, of degradation, of terrible bad things happening, but they're still nostalgic about it. Going back in our section to Shemot Perek Tadzayim, just to look at the end of the Perek to see how the man is described, I'll tell you in a moment what page it's on. We're looking back to Zion Pasuk Lamed Hay. The Torah skips forward in the story, as it often does, in order to close off a unit, even if it's not chronological. The Torah skips ahead and says, Ubnei Shalachu Taman Arba'im Shana, on page 388. Ubnei Shalachu Taman Arba'im Shana Adbo'an al Eretz Noshabet. The Bnei Israel ate the man for 40 years until they came to the inhabited land of Eretz Israel. At Haman Achu Adolam El Ktei Eretz Canaan. They ate the man until they got right to the edge of Eretz Canaan. Until they got to Eretz Israel. So what's the irony here? The irony is that the Sir HaBasar, these pats of meat, that they imagined were a symbol of solid dependency on food, of food and materialism, was but an illusion. It never really existed, or if it did exist, it certainly was temporary and wasn't long-lasting. It wasn't in a positive way. But this food that you're complaining about that to you seems unattainable and seems insubstantial, that's the food that's going to bring you all the way to your goal of getting to Eretz Yisrael, the food that comes from a Kaddish Baruch Hu. So that's how she ends off this class, by connecting it all in together. With the meat and the man, in a very nice, neatly tied package. Questions, comments?
Yeah. Can you tell me that one more time?
Yes. She says that the concept of the meat, whether it happened or not, belongs to a time of persecution. The context that it was in was a negative context. What they viewed as an image of solid, dependent food was in a negative context. What they viewed as an insubstantial food was in a positive context. That food in the negative context was temporary. It was what they thought was substantial, in the end was really insubstantial. But what food was the one that sustained them all the way until they got to Eretz Israel, until they got to the goal, the ultimate peak of what could possibly happen? That was the man that they complained about, that were tired of this stuff already.
Wasn't it a different generation that got to Israel, though?
Yeah, it was, but
some
it's
been
Israel
as a unit. Even experienced those flesh.
They had, it took them 40 years to get over the slave mentality.
Stories, grandmother's stories, Baba and I just passed down and on about
we
how
all
difficult
are.
It was.
Sure.
In the old days, and that's why they're still thinking about that.
Sure. Yeah. Although at this time when they're complaining about it, it's still before the 40 years. It's right at the very beginning.
Right.
Even that what I showed you in Bamidbar, when they complained about the man and they got the slab, it was only in the second year. It was right before the Chedah Meraglim. So everybody knew, right, because everybody had experienced that at that point. Right, you don't hear complaining about the man afterwards, because it could be that they didn't know anything, that they really just learned their lesson with the slab. So
after a while you get used to it, and then they get all this other food, and they say, oh, remember those days when all we had to do was pick it up? And
you didn't have to work in. But that's part of it, is that when you get to Eretz Yisrael, now all of a sudden you have to do the work, you know. But the man coming straight from Hashem is substituted with the concept that whatever comes out of the land comes because you do the mitzvot. Now the man doesn't just happen. It happens because you do mitzvot, not because you do physical labor. But when you keep the mitzvot, that's when the land flourishes.
And you have to fix yourself.
So
yourself.
You have to get it yourself, yes, at that point. You know, it's a whole different idea of person. It's like, you know, you're getting back into real life when you get to Eretz Yisrael. Before then, you're just getting it. You know, you have all this free time. It's like, you know, like being in kollel, where you have all day long and you can learn as much as you want. You have no responsibilities. You have no family. And getting to Eretz Yisrael is the time when, like, okay, you know, now you have a family to support. Now you have to get
world.
It, the real world.
Get
that
right,
you know. So, okay, good evening. Have a good evening. Next week, Rosh Hashanah, we'll talk about the slab.
Do you have last week's paper?